Though the telephone was two rooms away, Huey could hear the doctor's and Tommy's voices clearly, for they had to shout into the telephone to be heard at the other end. Tommy sounded nervous, not just because of the message, but because he'd never talked on a telephone before. Huey had done it a couple of times, though he never had quite trusted the contraption. There was something unnatural about carrying on a conversation with somebody miles away, somebody you couldn't see. Tommy came back into Huey's room.
Mr. Wheeler said tell you to hurry up and get well. Said he'd ride out this morning to tell Mama and Daddy.
It's a waste of a public servant's time and a burden on the taxpayers.
How much tax have you ever paid, Uncle Huey?
Right smart of whiskey tax, I expect.
Later in the day, Huey judged it to be around noon, he blinked the sleep from his eyes and saw a tall, lanky, slightly stooped figure standing in the doorway, hat crushed in his big hands. A false smile revealed a gold tooth.
Huey Calloway, you got awful lazy in your old age, laying in bed plumb to noontime.
Snort Yarnell! I thought I was in the midst of a nightmare, but it's turned out real. What are you doing in town this time of day? Get fired again?
I ain't been fired in my life. I always quit before they get the chance.
Though he forced himself to grin broadly, Snort couldn't control the anxiety in his eyes.
I hear you finally found a bronc too tough for you to handle. I'll go out and ride him for you.
That won't be hard to do. He's dead.
Probably died of fright knowing I'd be coming to turn him wrong side out. You ain't going to be in here long, are you? I got plans for the two of us.
Plans?
Snort always had plans. Most of them led to calamity of one sort or another.
Figured we'd go down into Mexico this fall and buy us a bunch of raw broncs real cheap. We'd spend the winter riding them and bring them north in the spring to sell. Our pockets would jingle like a wagon load of trace chains.
Last time we went to Mexico, we were lucky to get out of there with a horse apiece and the saddles to put on them.
That was on account of bad tequila. This time we won't drink nothing but the best.
Huey sensed Snort's laughter was as fake as the gold tooth. That notion about Mexico probably just popped into his head as a way of making conversation. There wasn't a career politician in the Austin State House who could outlie Snort Yarnell. But Huey wasn't exactly an amateur at the game.
I sort of figured we might go down into South Texas and rope outlaw steers out of the brush this winter. Them ranchers down there pay pretty good for clearing the mossy horns out of their pastures.
Well, that sounds like fun, too. We'll take Tommy with us and show him what real cowpunching is like. Think you'll be able to ride in a few days?
Oh, why not? May need somebody to help me onto my horse at first till this bum knee heals a little, but once I'm in the saddle, I'll be as good as I ever was.
All right, old partner. I'll be looking in on you again.
Snort turned to go, but stopped in the doorway, his head down. He twisted the hat in his hands before turning and coming back. His eyes brimmed with tears.
Damn it all, Huey. Who are we lying to? That doctor says you'll be lucky if you ever get back on a horse again. Your cowboying days are over with.
Huey tried to say that the doctor was wrong, that he would be out of this bed and riding again in no time, but his throat tightened up so that he couldn't speak. Snort placed a strong hand on Huey's good shoulder and squeezed.
Best friends I ever had in this world was you and old Grady Welch. Grady's gone and now you. Damn it all, life just ain't fair. I promise you, you ain't going to ever need for nothing, old partner. Anything you want, just let me know. Old Snort will be here before you can draw a second breath.
A tear on his cheek, Snort turned quickly and strode out of the room.
Damn that doctor, getting Snort all upset for nothing. Of course I'm going to ride again. I'll keep cowboying until I'm 100 years old and get myself killed by a jealous husband.
Huey turned his head away from the door. His throat felt as if he were about to choke, and his eyes burned like fire. He supposed it was the fumes from all that medicine in the doctor's cabinet. Old man Jenkins came that afternoon. Peeler trailed behind him in his jodhpurs and lace-up boots, offering no more than a quiet howdy, so long as his employer was there. Jenkins pulled up a chair beside Huey's bed.
By rights, I ought not to pay none of your expenses. You got yourself hurt doing exactly what I told you not to. but I've always had a generous heart. I'll go halves with you.
I hate to put you to all that expense.
I've arranged for you to be moved to a boarding house as soon as you're able. It'll be some cheaper. This old quack charges like his place was a Manger Hotel in San Antone.
I figure to be back at the ranch pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, by rights, it's Frank Gervin who ought to pay the bills, foisting off that bunch of snides on us. But I sicked the Curandero woman on him. She claims she'd give him a case of the itch at least. Maybe even the piles. Ah!
Jenkins rose to leave.
The next place you work, I hope you follow orders better than you did for me.
By that, Huey assumed he was out of a job. Well, he'd been out of a job many times, but had never had much trouble finding some place to work. There was always a call for a good cowpuncher. Soon as he knitted a little, he might take Biscuit up into the Guadalupes, as pretty a country as he'd ever seen. Tommy, too, if the boy wanted to go. They'd have their pick of places to work. Peeler had been so quiet, Huey'd almost forgotten he was still there. The chauffeur moved nearer the bed and gazed down on Huey with sympathy.
I wish there was something I could do for you.
There is. Next time you go to the ranch, tell Aparicio and the boys I'd be obliged if they'd look after Biscuit for a couple of weeks, till I'm in shape to come and get him.
A couple of weeks? Don't you know how bad you're hurt?
I've been hurt worse than this, falling off a wood-hauling wagon.
You're not going to want to hear this, but I wouldn't be honest if I didn't say it. While you're laying here, you'd best be thinking about what you'll do from now on. Your wild riding days are over. Even a gentle horse like Biscuit may be too much for you. But you've got to keep on living. You'd better start figuring on how you're going to do it.
Huey stared in frustration at the open door through which Peeler left. He made a fist with his right hand, for he could barely move the fingers on his left. He would have thought everybody knew him better than that, already giving up on him when it hadn't even been 24 hours since his little accident. It would take more than a crazy black stud to set him permanently on the ground. Tommy came into the room.
Need anything?
I need for everybody to quit telling me what a hopeless wreck I am. I've had toothaches hurt me worse than this.
His left arm and his right leg both pulsed with pain, and each time he moved, he felt as if someone were running a sword through his lungs. He moved no more than he had to. Tommy didn't answer, and Huey changed the subject.
You better be finding a way to get back to the ranch. You ain't been fired too, have you?
I'm staying here to look after you.
The doctor's supposed to be doing that, and at considerable expense, the way old man Jenkins tells it. If you're going to be a cowboy, you better be out there cowboying.
I had no idea it was going to be like this. For Skip and you?
A cowboy life ain't all roses. It sticks a thorn in you from time to time.
Home looks a lot better to me than it used to. But right now, the main job I've got is taking care of you.
I always took care of myself.
Let's see you walk to the toilet.
You know I can't do that.
Then there's no use in us talking any more about it.
Tommy looked into a water pitcher on a small table beside Huey's bed.
I'll go pump some fresh water for you.
Stiff drink of whiskey is what I need.
He knew he wouldn't get it. Not until he was out of this place and away from the doctor's close scrutiny. He'd been looking at a pair of crutches leaning in a corner, propped between a medicine cabinet and a wall. He'd never used any before, but it stood to reason that a man who could ride bronc should be able to master a pair of crutches. He imagined the surprise he would see on bystanders' faces when he entered the saloon and bellied up to the bar with an arm and a leg wrapped like Christmas packages. They'd know then that Huey Calloway was made of sterner stuff than they gave him credit for. He appraised the distance. He would be unable to put weight on his right leg, but he could hop on his left, holding onto the bed partway, then the table, and finally the medicine cabinet. The first step was to get out of bed. That, he reasoned, might be the hardest part, for he had lain here since last night, hardly changing position. His body would be stiff, resisting movement. He tried sitting up, but he immediately fell back on his pillow, stricken by an internal wrenching so intense that it left him in a cold sweat. He rested a bit until the pain subsided, then decided to try a different way. Carefully, he slid his left leg to the edge of the bed and dragged the bound leg after it. He swung both legs off, twisting his body around to a 90-degree angle without his back losing contact with the mattress. The left leg bent normally at the knee, but the bound leg extended straight out, stiff, as if splinted between boards. He gritted his teeth. The really hard part would come now, raising his upper body off the mattress. He had little control over his left hand, but with his right, he gripped the edge of the mattress and pulled himself to a sitting position so quickly that he was up before the pain had time to register. It came with such a blinding force that he bit his tongue to keep from crying out, and he almost fainted. The room seemed to swing back and forth like a pendulum. Nausea brought his breakfast up into his throat, burning hard, and he thought he'd lose it. Gradually, the dizziness diminished, and with it, much of the hurting. He felt sweat, cold and clammy, running down his face, tickling his chest. But he was still sitting up. He wished old man Jenkins could see him, and Peeler, and Snort. When he thought he was steady enough, he eased forward until his left foot touched the floor. He tested his weight on it and decided it would hold him. The right leg remained stiff and useless, but he could hold the edge of the bed with his right hand. He pushed himself the final inches to clear the mattress and was standing on his left foot. Holding to the edge of the bed for balance, he made the first hop. The internal pain came roaring back. This time he couldn't help crying out. Nausea came upon him again in a rush, and with it the dizziness. He couldn't hold on to the bed. He fell forward, unable to help himself. He struck the floor on his stomach, then his face. Most of the breath gushed from his lungs, and his nose smarted as if a fist had struck him. He felt he was still falling, far into some bottomless black hole. Tommy hurried into the room.
Uncle Huey!
The doctor was only a few steps behind.
Come, son. Help me lift him back onto the bed. Careful. He may have undone everything we did for him.
Huey had never felt agony more intense. All the bright suns he saw yesterday came back, spinning as wildly as before. He had but a fingernail hold on consciousness.
He thinks he's a bronc rider and he can't even stay on a bed. We may have to tie him like a horse.
The doctor felt over his leg and his arm, then his ribs and his chest.
These old cowboys get to thinking they're made of rawhide. They're more like eggshells, and nobody ever put Humpty Dumpty back together again.
The doctor picked up the crutches to take them to another room.
I should have done this in the first place. You don't leave candy in front of a child and expect him not to eat any.
Huey spent a miserable night. All of yesterday's pain reawakened and intensified. Trying to get out of bed too early had been a mistake, a lesson learned the hard way, like so many others in his life. But if he hadn't tried, he wouldn't know. At least Tommy didn't spend a second night sitting up in a chair. The doctor admired the boy's loyalty, but arranged for him to sleep and eat in a nearby boarding house. Nevertheless, Tommy was at his uncle's side soon after sunup.
How do you feel?
A whole lot better. That medicine is doing me a world of good.
In fact, when the doctor wasn't looking, he poured much of it into a bottle provided for him to empty his bladder. If a medicine had to taste bad to do a man any good, this one ought to cure everything from warts to double pneumonia. He still judged distances by the length of time it would take to travel them on horseback. Though he'd ridden in automobiles several times, he never got used to the notion that they could carry people as far in an hour as a good horse might go in a better part of a day. He wasn't surprised that Walter and Eve showed up, but he was amazed they arrived so soon. He would have thought they'd come in a wagon, the way they usually traveled.
How'd you get here so soon?
Alvin Laudermilk brought us in his automobile.
Alvin's got him an automobile?
Alvin had always been a horseman and preached mightily against the motor car. First Blue Hannigan, and now Alvin Laudermilk.
Oh, the world's changing too fast.
We came all this way and didn't have to fix but four flats. That's some traveling.
Eve hesitantly took Huey's right hand after seeing that it was not injured.
Tommy says you're in this shape on account of him.
I'm in this shape on account of Fat Gervin.
When we asked you to look out for Tommy, we didn't mean for it to come to this.
He was a little put out with me for not letting him ride that bronc, but... I was afraid he didn't have a chance.
Damn you, Huey Calloway. You're the most aggravating man I ever knew.
How do you figure that?
You do the most thoughtless things sometimes without giving any consideration to the consequences, and you make me mad enough to want to shoot you. Then you do something like this and make me want to hug your neck. I would, but I don't know where all you're busted.
I'd appreciate the hug. What I'd appreciate a lot more would be for y'all to take me away from here. I'm damn tired of this bed.
Walter shook his head.
The doctor says you'll be on your back for some time yet.
If I had Biscuit here, I'd saddle up and ride off right now.
He knew better, but he didn't want them thinking of him as an invalid. They'd want to start doing things for him, and he'd always been most comfortable doing for himself.
Alvin's waiting in the next room. He's eager to see you.
Huey warmed with pleasure at the thought of seeing his old friend and sometime employer. He'd intended to stop by Alvin's place for a visit when he and Tommy went to Upton City to receive the Bronx from Fat, but his unexpected encounter with Spring Renfro got in the way.
Good old Alvin. I wonder if he's ever got any better looking.
Judge for yourself.
Walter went to fetch him. Alvin grinned like a new cat in a barn full of mice. His false teeth a little too large, his pudgy face a little too red. He looked older than Huey remembered him, although he lacked a lot being as old as Jenkins or C.C. Tarpley. People said Alvin had to slow down, which was the reason he employed a ranch foreman to help ease the burden of labor and responsibility. His longtime love for good whiskey probably bore much of the fault. Huey grasped Alvin's hand.
Did you bring me a drink?
Alvin winked at Eve.
Oh, Eve drank it all up on the way here.
She made a fist as if to punch him.
As soon as you get out of that bed, we'll make up for lost time. About 4 years worth.
4 years is a lot of whiskey.
Well, we won't drink it all at once. We can spread it out over a couple of days.
You know you've stopped drinking, Alvin. You've been quit for 2 years.
Alvin looked around as if to see who might be listening.
Now, what did you have to go and say that for? You're going to ruin my reputation.
Huey made a half-hearted grin, trying to play along with their joking, though he didn't find it funny. He remembered when Alvin used to hide bottles from his wife, Cora, all over the ranch, so he would never be without. If he really had quit after having loved whiskey so much, that was another indication he was slipping.
Everybody back home is anxious about you. Cora, even her mother.
Huey believed what he said about Cora, but not his comment about Cora's mother. The old lady never liked Huey, but then she didn't like her son-in-law either. Huey waited for Alvin to mention someone else. Alvin didn't.
How's Miss Renfro?
Well, you can ask her yourself.
He turned and beckoned. A shadow moved through the doorway. Spring Renfro gave Huey only a thin and fleeting smile, but it was like someone lit up all the lights in the house.
I'm sorry to see you like this, Huey.
Oh.
He pulled up the sheet to cover his shoulders.
I feel fine. Just a bruise here and there.
The sight of the teacher was like a tonic to him. Some might regard her as a spinster and even say she was plain, but each man's standard of pretty was a personal matter. She could probably still have her pick of Upton County bachelors, age 40 and over, and there were a good many of them.
I sure didn't expect you to come, Spring, Miss Renfro, but I'm glad you did. I can already feel the hurt fading away.
Spring's lips tightened as she stared at him.
Everybody's been very concerned about you.
Well, you don't have to be. I'll be up from here in a few days. I'm out of a job.
He looked at Alvin.
Reckon you got one for me? I wouldn't ask for full pay. I know it'll be a month or two before I can do anything heavy.
The fun went out of Alvin's eyes.
Oh, sure, Huey. You'll be as good as new in no time, and there's always more work than we can get around to.
His words were confident, but their tone said they were empty. Alvin couldn't see the future as Huey chose to see it. He saw only a crippled-up cowboy. He had seen a lot of them in his time. But Huey had no intention of remaining this way. He'd be as good as he ever had been. Better even, because every year he lived made him a little smarter. Huey's visitors stayed a couple of hours, the talk rambling around like a blind sheep over subjects of little or no interest to Huey. He only half listened to most of it, putting in a word here and there. He concentrated his attention on spring. He remembered with pleasure the summer they came to know one another, and with regret, the promises spoken, promises broken. 4 years. It seemed not half so long since they had talked of buying the Barcroft homestead and settling down together to a life of farming. But Huey had been too restless to walk long behind a plow. Spring released him, and he rode away to seek new country, hoping to find a place where life would remain as it had been in his youth, never changing, never making him feel like a stranger, lost and passed up by time, trapped in a world he no longer understood. Surely somewhere there must be such a place. Maybe he'd find it in the Guadalupes when he was well. There was no question of the visitors returning home that evening, for the drive from Upton City had killed most of the day. They took rooms in the hotel. That was enough to tell Huey his brother and sister-in-law were coming up in the world. In earlier times, when they had to be in town overnight, they carried their bedrolls to put up in a wagon yard. They came again after breakfast. Huey talked with everyone, but his gaze remained mostly on Spring. Before the group left town, Spring tarried a few minutes alone with Huey.
Please do whatever the doctor tells you.
I can't do much else as long as I'm laying here, but I won't be here long.
He wished he had held on to her hand, but she had moved back a step. He got an inkling of the hurt he had caused her, the hurt she must still be feeling.
How about you, Spring? Are you happy?
I'm making a living.
But are you happy?
It depends on what you consider happy. I guess I am. Are you?
I was. Well, I thought I was anyway, till this happened to me. Everybody tells me Farley Neal is a good man.
She was a moment in answering.
He is.
You all planning on getting married?
The question took her by surprise.
Would it bother you?
I've got no right to be bothered. I went off and left you a long time ago.
It was a decision we made together. If you'd stayed, you'd have had to change too much, and you weren't ready for that.
Well, I still ain't changed. Not much, anyway.
If you did, you wouldn't be Huey Calloway.
She reached as if to take his hand again, but changed her mind. Before he could say anything, she left. He stared at the empty doorway, remembering the way she looked, the way she talked, her gentle fragrance, and he pondered the imponderable price of freedom. He hated the crutch. Though it gave him limited mobility, it was unwieldy and kept threatening to throw him to the floor. Because of his broken arm, he could use only one. That kept him off balance. Each step aroused sharp protest somewhere inside, so he ventured out of the room only to take advantage of the doctor's indoor plumbing at the end of the hall. Tommy was usually there to support him, but Huey made him stop at the bathroom door. Some activities were meant to be private. Peeler visited every day that he wasn't driving old man Jenkins somewhere. Bias Viegas and Aparicio Rodriguez dropped in once. Aparicio said little, but Huey could read the thought in his eyes. What happened to Huey could have happened to me. It still might. Bias turned from looking at the cast on Huey's leg.
Maybe so now you will learn to cook, like me.
One day of my cooking and the whole outfit would up and quit. No, I'll stick to punching cows.
Jenkins did not appear. Huey asked the doctor about him.
He inquires about you almost every day, but he won't come by. I think you trouble his conscience.
But not enough for him to pay all my doctor bills.
The age of miracles is past.
It bothered Huey that Snort Yarnell hadn't visited him again. He assumed at first that Snort was in a distant camp on the Slash R and couldn't come to town. Then Tommy told him he bumped into Snort on the street. Snort asked about Huey, then hurried away. That he hadn't come by to visit hurt almost as much as the broken arm and the bum knee. About a week after the accident, Dr. Evans said Huey was doing well enough to be moved to the boarding house where Tommy was staying. He brought a wheelchair.
It's too far to walk on that crutch. Tommy can push you over there in 5 minutes.
Huey took an instant disliking to the chair. Among other things, it reminded him of old Lady Faversham. She could walk when she wanted to, but she favored a wheelchair because it was a way of seeing to it that others waited upon her.
Can't we hold off till dark so everybody won't be looking at me? I don't want them all thinking I'm a cripple.
They might as well get used to seeing you as you are.
Well, I don't intend to stay this way. The healing is just taking a little more time than I expected.
You'd better get used to the idea, Huey. Now, I don't know to what extent you will eventually recover, but I can tell you this. You'll never be the same as you were.
Betcha.
Getting out of bed and into the wheelchair involved considerable internal pain, but the embarrassment of being watched by strangers was almost as bad. Huey kept his head down and his hat low as Tommy pushed him along. It almost reached the boarding house when Huey's eye caught a familiar figure on the opposite side of the street.
There's Snort Yarnell!
Snort stopped to look, and for a moment he seemed about to hurry away. Instead, he reluctantly crossed the street, pausing to let a wagon go by.
Howdy, Huey.
Hey, what you been doing that you couldn't come to see me?
I wanted to. God knows I did. I couldn't bring myself to look at you in this shape.
Look, I won't be like this for long. Tommy says he saw you a couple of days ago. You must have an easy boss if he lets you hang around town.
Ain't with the Slash R anymore. I quit.
Huey was not overly surprised. It hadn't been in Snort's nature to stay with one job long enough to wear out a pair of pants, but Huey thought he might have found a home at the Slash R. Even someone restless as Snort needed to light in one place eventually.
What are you gonna do now?
Get me a job here in town? Night watchman.
Huey could hardly believe this.
Walking around in the dark, jingling keys and checking doors? That don't sound like a job for Snort Yarnell.
I hate to admit it, Huey, but seeing you the other day scared the hell out of me.
Why? That was nothing compared to the time you saw a horse stomp old Grady Welch to death.
But that was years ago. And we're older now. After seeing you, I went back out to the ranch, took a look at them owl-headed broncs, and got the shake so bad I couldn't hold a cup of coffee. I asked for my time.
You'll get over it. Me and you'll be riding a rough string together before the snow flies.
Ain't you figured it out yet? You ain't never riding the rough string again. Neither am I. It's a fool's game. We sat at that table too long.
Huey stared at Snort's back as the cowboy's long legs carried him quickly away.
I never thought I'd see Snort Yarnell boogered over anything. You reckon he's right?
You can't pay attention to what Snort says. He changes his mind a lot oftener than he changes his socks.
But Huey felt cold in the pit of his stomach. He tried to dismiss it as foolishness, but it wouldn't go away. His broken arm hurt, and his knee, and something inside. He tried to roll a cigarette, but his hand shook and he spilled his tobacco.
Oh, damn that Snort. Whatever he's got is contagious. He's giving it to me.
The boarding house room he shared with Tommy was on the ground floor, so he didn't have to contend with the stairs, though getting up the 2 steps to the front porch was a challenge. Because of that, he didn't try to venture beyond the porch the first 3 days. He gradually learned to manipulate the crutch with some dexterity. He could see an improvement in his right knee when the doctor unwrapped it. Most of the angry red was gone, the blue was fading, and the external damage was healing over. The knee remained stiff, however. He couldn't straighten the leg.
This will keep getting better, won't it?
That knee took a lot of punishment. It's like a twisted hinge. You know, you hammer it out the best you can, but it may bind and never work again quite the way it did when it was new.
You're telling me I could have a gimpy leg from now on?
It's a mark of your trade. How many old cowboys do you know that don't limp or walk with a cane? The body can take only so much.
What about my arm?
It may never be strong again, but at least the elbow's intact.
Huey resisted the doctor's appraisal.
Well, maybe you just ain't run into a patient as determined as I am.
Keep that attitude. Determination may be better than any medicine I can give you.
But determination and faith both began to flag. Each morning when he arose, Huey sat on the edge of the bed and tried straightening the right leg. He attempted to convince himself that it was getting better every day, but after 5 or 6 days, he realized that any improvement was marginal, or perhaps even imaginary. At least the knee was giving him less pain day by day, he could put a little weight on it. The doctor said perhaps soon he could discard the crutch and get along on a cane.
Tommy, I want to go to the wagon yard and take a look at Biscuit.
Aparicio had brought the brown and Tommy's dun to town. Tommy eyed the crutch with misgivings.
It's a good ways down there.
Fine. I need to get as far away from this place as I can.
Huey shrugged off Tommy's attempt to help him down the porch steps.
Let's see how good I can do on my own.
The knee hurt less than he expected, though he felt a sharp pain inside. Whatever shook loose was still floating around. It was only a couple of blocks from the boarding house to the wagon yard, but it felt like a mile. Sweat ran down his face by the time he got there, and the breeze was cool, blowing through the wet spots in his shirt.
You better sit down a while.
I've been sitting too long already. The only place I want to sit down is in a saddle.
Biscuit ambled up to the fence. Huey rubbed the horse's nose, then moved through the wooden gate. Biscuit watched suspiciously, for Huey's movements were strange to him, and the horse took the crutch as a potential threat.
Oh, howdy, fella. You miss me? I sure missed you. They taking good care of you?
The horse ventured up to nuzzle him, hoping for some kind of handout. Huey patted him and rubbed his good right hand up and down the brown neck. His eyes burned a little. Cooped up indoors so long, he wasn't used to this bright sunlight.
Saddle him up for me.
Uncle Huey, you can't.
Saddle him.
Tommy fetched a bridle, then led Biscuit to where the saddle had been placed on a wooden rack.
You ought to do this.
Huey knew he couldn't mount from the ground.
There's a hay bale on the ground yonder. Lead him over there.
Huey had some difficulty in stepping up onto the bale, but the crutch gave him leverage. Tommy led the horse up close. Huey handed him the crutch. Gripping the horn with his right hand, he made a little hop, fitting his left foot into the stirrup and swinging the stiff right leg up and over the saddle. It extended awkwardly to one side. He couldn't bring it in close enough to touch the stirrup. The effort set the knee to throbbing, but Huey was in the saddle. That was the important thing.
Come on, Biscuit. Let's mosey a little.
He set Biscuit into a walk, then a trot out into the large corral. Almost immediately, Huey had to slow him back to a walk. His knee felt as if it were afire, and the internal pain was like a sword thrust between his ribs. Nauseous, he leaned out to one side, expecting to vomit. Tommy came running, bringing the crutch.
I tried to tell you. Let me help you down.
I can make it by myself.
But Huey quickly found that he could not. Huey had to lean heavily on Tommy for support to dismount. He fitted the crutch under his right arm and felt cold sweat breaking on his face. The nausea was slow to pass. Biscuit seemed confused. Huey patted him on the neck.
It ain't your fault, old friend.
I'll unsaddle him for you while you rest a while, and we'll go back to the boarding house.
Huey dropped down on the bale of hay, his shoulders slumped. He watched while Tommy removed the saddle, blanket, and bridle and fed Biscuit some oats out of the barrel. All the discouraging words he'd heard from Snort and Peeler and the doctor seemed to be shouting in his ears. What if they were right? What if he never could ride again? He bowed his head so Tommy couldn't see him drag his sleeve across his eyes. Huey sat in a wicker chair on the front porch of the boarding house, absently tapping the end of a cane against the wooden floor as he gazed morosely out into the street. He observed people going about their end-of-the-day business as if the world were not skewed off its proper axis and they'd never heard of such a thing as an outlawed black stud. Tommy sat sideways on the top step, leaning against a post and positioned so he could watch his uncle, his guileless eyes full of concern. He'd remained close after the incident at the wagon yard.
Uncle Huey, you ain't taken a decent meal in 3 days. Ain't slept much either.
It's hard to sleep good when you've had the slats kicked out from under you.
Huey had not summoned the nerve to go back to the wagon yard, much as he wanted to. Seeing Biscuit, Knowing he couldn't ride him would only renew the bitter disappointment.
It ain't healthy sitting around here moping and spending money you ain't got. You'd be better off at home with folks. How about me telephoning Alvin or Wes Wheeler?
They've got more important things to do than drive all this way for a cripple who ain't in shape to do anything for anybody.
You've done a lot of good things for a lot of people.
That was before. I ain't worth much to anybody now.
You're worth a lot to me, and Mama, and Daddy, and to Miss Renfro, too, I bet.
Miss Renfro and Alvin's foreman have got an understanding. Or so I heard.
She came all the way here to see you.
Huey didn't feel like putting up with Tommy's pestering.
I wish you'd go down to the wagon yard and make sure they fed Biscuit this evening.
I fed him myself, remember? He's getting fat standing in that pan. He's liable to try and throw you off the next time you get on him.
The next time? Huey wondered when the next time would come, or if it would ever be.
Well, go see if he's got enough water. The worst thing that can happen to an animal is to run out of water.
He knew Tommy wasn't fooled. Huey was trying to get rid of him for a while. Tommy pushed to his feet.
I'll go see if they need any help putting out hay for the night.
He'd been doing some work around the wagon yard to pay for the two horses' keep. Tommy started up the street, but he stopped and looked back. He returned to the edge of the porch.
I think that truck yonder is Blue Hannigan's.
Huey had not reconciled himself to the thought of Blue Hannigan retiring some of his freight wagons for a truck. It was like surrendering and taking up the enemy's flag. The truck pulled to a shuddering stop in front of the boarding house. Huey expected to see one of Hannigan's drivers, but Blue Hannigan himself stepped to the ground. He extracted a wad of tobacco from his mouth and dropped it in the dirt before starting toward the porch.
Well, damn, if this ain't a sight to behold, Huey Calloway in a rocking chair. Ain't you ashamed of yourself lolling around in idleness while there's still daylight left?
He walked up to the porch and extended his hand.
No more shame than you ought to be, turning good mules out to pasture and scaring horses off in the road with that stinking contraption.
At least it hasn't throwed me off and stomped me.
Hannigan's forced smile faded as he stepped back to give Huey a deep frowning once-over.
You look better than I expected. Going by what I'd heard. Can you navigate with that cane?
Well, fair. But I couldn't even foot race Fat Gervin.
He enjoyed a moment's fantasy of outrunning Fat and administering a few good cane licks to that broad backside. He tried to flex his left arm, but the cast wouldn't give.
I don't know how much it'll bend when the doctor finally cuts this thing off.
Time and patience, Huey.
Oh, worst thing is something busted loose inside. The doctor says he can patch up an arm and a leg, but he can't do much for my vitals.
How'd you like to go home?
Home had always been whatever ranch Huey worked for, and at that moment he was unemployed.
I don't have a home, except for Walter's and Eve's place, and that's theirs, not mine.
I brought a load of freight, and it's too late to start home tonight. I've got room for a passenger if you'd like to go back with me in the morning.
Why don't you, Uncle Huey? I can take the horses home.
By yourself? I'd never stop catching hell from your mama.
I can handle it, like I could have handled that black stud.
But what use would I be to anybody? What could I do besides maybe swat flies?
What are you doing here? At least we wouldn't be running up a board bill.
It makes sense, even if he is kin to you. Maybe you'll heal faster being amongst family and the people that know you best.
The thought set Huey's skin to prickling. This was an eye-filling country to be in, surrounded by the rock-crowned peaks of the Davis Mountains. But even a mountain got old when watched too long from a rocking chair.
I won't be able to get out and open gates for you.
Any gates get in our way, we'll just buzz through them.
Huey found Tommy nodding hopefully. The boy had grown up a lot in a short time, and he was ready to go home.
All right, Tommy. But don't you tarry along the road, and be sure you go way around Pecos City. It's too rough for a farm boy.
Huey tried to look stoic while the doctor carefully unwrapped his knee, though it remained sore enough to make him grit his teeth. The surface appeared to have healed over fairly well.
Bend it a little and let's see what happens. It's slow and careful now.
Huey tried cautiously. The knee felt as if he had jammed a hot coal into the joint.
I don't know how much more it'll improve. I'll rewrap it. and you'd best abuse it as little as possible until the healing is complete.
What about my arm?
That cast had better stay on it in another month.
Oh, it itches under there like a nest of lice have found a home.
That is altogether possible.
Huey couldn't tell when the doctor was joking with him, for his face never changed. The only hint of a smile was a slight twitching at one end of his gray mustache.
Doc, I'm obliged to you for taking such good care of me. I'll start paying you as soon as I'm able to work again.
Oh, don't you worry about that. Jenkins is paying me.
Only half. He said half the expense is mine.
That's what he thinks. But I quoted his share at double my normal rates.
Is that honest?
Of course not. You think cowboys are the only liars in the world? One of the first things a young doctor learns is how to look regretful when he asks a well-heeled patient for twice what the treatment is worth.
He motioned that he was finished.
Let me know how you get along.
He put the bandage roll back in a cabinet.
And, do me a favor, will you?
What's that?
Leave the Bronx to the young men. Their bones knit better.
Hannigan and Snort Yarnell waited for him on the porch rather than go inside. Snort swore that the smell of medicine made him sick, and the only cure he had found was whiskey. When he had money, or his companions did, he took a lot of curing. He walked with Hannigan and Huey to the truck, which he eyed with silent disapproval.
You won't last another week on that night watchman's job. You'll be busting Bronx again before I get this cast off my arm.
I wouldn't want to take your money. Not that you got any. I know how old man Jenkins pays. I do hate to see you leave here in this shape. I've got half a mind to go along and see that you're took care of.
Don't worry. I can't afford to die. I'm too broke to bury.
Snort gave him a grip that threatened to put Huey's right hand in a cast along with his left arm, and then helped him up into the truck.
Don't let Blue run you off in the ditch. Them trucks is dangerous.
Hannigan picked his way along a crooked old wagon trail to which rubber tires were still something new, out beyond the glass mountains. Then across the dry greasewood flats toward Fort Stockton. The truck was rough even on an average stretch, and the jolting was severe in places where wind had blown out the ruts or where they crossed over deeply worn cattle trails. Huey ached inside, but he wouldn't complain. Now and again, when a relatively smooth surface presented itself, Hannigan would step on the accelerator and push the truck to 20 or 25 miles an hour. The speed almost took Huey's breath away.
I've owned many a good mule in my time, but I've never had one that could go like this.
Huey remembered Hannigan's frustration with his truck on the street in Upton City.
When a mule acted up, though, you could kick it in the belly. Kick this thing and all you get is a broken foot.
What would you think about driving one of these things?
I think I'd rather have both legs broke. Are you serious? Or just making talk?
Well, just making talk now, but someday when you're all healed up as much as you're going to, I might get serious. Well, like them or not, these trucks are a coming thing. I took a look at the wall a couple years ago and saw the handwriting all over it. A day'll come when you'll stand on the road and see a car or a truck pass by every 10 or 15 minutes. Horses and mules are fixing to go the way of the buffalo.
It was a sobering thought, one Huey didn't tolerate for long.
Nope. These gasoline buggies are a big thing right now, but they'll fade away like chin whiskers when everybody's had a belly full of trying to keep them running. There'll always be horses and mules.
Even Alvin Laudermilk sees what's coming. He's selling off a lot of his mares and increasing his cow herd to take up the slack. Ain't you read about the big oil booms over in East Texas? It's on account of everybody needing gasoline.
I heard those oil fields stink worse than a den of polecats.
Not if they belong to you. They smell like money.
But I don't own one. I've always been happy just being a cowpuncher.
If that leg don't straighten up and that arm, you may not be a cowpuncher anymore. And what you gonna do then?
Huey swallowed hard. He didn't want to admit how many nights he'd lain awake wondering the same thing. He certainly didn't care to start driving a truck. He fell back on one of Eve's favorite sayings when doubt intruded.
Well, the Lord will provide.
The Lord generally provides best to those who help themselves.
Late in the afternoon, Hannigan pulled into Upton City. He had repaired 3 flat tires along the way, which he said was not bad for the distance. Huey figured it would have taken 3 days to make the same mileage on horseback, if one didn't want to punish the mount. But time had seldom been of premium value to him. He had rather have made the trip on Biscuit.
I need to stop by the office, see if the roof's falling in. Then I'll take you on after Walter.
A sinking sun had turned the clouds to gold low on the western horizon. If Hannigan drove out to the place now, he would finish the trip in the dark.
Well, it's late, and I've already put you to too much trouble as it is. I'll tote my bedroll down to the wagon yard.
I ain't keen on driving after dark, so I won't argue with you. There's a car in my office that don't get used much. Better than any at the wagon yard, and free.
Free sounded good to Huey in his present financially stressed condition.
Well, I ain't quite flat busted. I'll set you up to supper down at the chili joint. It's little enough to pay for the ride home.
Hannigan's schedule was so erratic that his wife never put anything in the oven until she saw him coming.
Get the deal.
Huey fumbled his tarp-covered roll down from the bed of the truck with his right arm, making a grab with the fingertips that stuck out from the cast on his broken left arm. He dropped it.
Let me!
Hannigan picked up the roll by the rope that bound it.
Damn if I ain't come down in the world. Can't even handle my own bedroll.
Leaning on the cane, he followed Hannigan up onto the narrow porch. Out back was a complex of corrals that used to be home to a considerable aggregation of horses and mules when all the freighting traveled by wagon. Now only a few remained, milling around wooden racks piled high with hay. Huey saw a new sheet-iron garage, and in front of it a couple of barrels with pumps attached to dispense gasoline and oil. At the distance, he could not actually smell them, but he imagined he did. Hannigan had surrendered to the new times. It seemed to Huey that most people had. Regret gripped him, then turned into something akin to grief at an old friend's funeral. The world he had known, the world in which he had been at home, was slipping away from him piece by piece. What he called a chili joint was actually more than that, though it hadn't always been. It had begun as a hole-in-the-wall cafe started by a one-time wagon cook who decided he wanted to spend the rest of his night sleeping under a roof instead of a tarp. Now it was operated by a couple of widows who had little experience with the open range but knew their way around a wood range. Though their fare was lacking in fancy appearance, it compensated in flavor and generous quantity. Fancy was all right for city folks, but filling is what a cowboy wanted. And Huey was hungry. He and Hannigan made their noon meal, such as it was, on cold biscuits, bacon, and coffee boiled in a black pot Hannigan carried in the bed of the truck. The two middle-aged women bustled about in the kitchen. One had a daughter who might be 18 or 20. Huey had difficulty in guessing the ages of people that young. She waited the tables, taking orders from the customers and from the two older women. In Huey's view, she was pretty as a speckled pup, slender where she ought to be and plump in the right places. But he suspected she might be a little lacking in smarts. She seemed to have to be told everything twice. Huey remembered one of the older women and her husband, who had been only moderately successful as a farmer. In Huey's view, he had worked himself to death trying to make crops on land better suited for grass. The widow came out of the kitchen to sympathize with Huey.
I hope you'll soon be back to your old self.
Well, I don't know if we want him that way or not. There was things about his old self that needed improvement.
One thing I ain't done, I ain't surrendered to trucks and automobiles.
The girl brought out 2 platters with steak, gravy, and fried potatoes.
Maybe you won't mind surrendering to this.
Huey quickly took up his knife and fork. Even Bias Viegas did not cook this well. Hannigan watched Huey cut into the steak, swabbing each piece in the gravy.
Ladies, if Huey ever decides to give up his bachelor ways, he's liable to come looking for one of you.
As I recall, there was talk a few years ago that he might be about to jump over the broomstick with that school teacher, Miss Renfro.
Huey laid down his fork.
I figured everybody had forgotten.
In a small town, everybody knows everything, and nobody forgets nothing.
Well, it was best for her that it didn't happen. I wouldn't have been no catch.
The conversation dampened his appetite, and then Fat Gervin came into the restaurant and finished it. Gervin stopped just inside the door to grin at the girl.
Howdy, sweetness.
Embarrassed, she looked away. Her mother looked out from the kitchen door.
Annabelle, you come in here and start a new pot of coffee. I'll wait on Mr. Gervin.
Relieved, the girl hurried into the kitchen. For the first time, Gervin saw Huey. He seemed about to turn and leave, then changed his mind and walked with heavy steps to the table where Huey and Hannigan sat.
Hadn't heard you was back in town.
Huey was about to say he'd just arrived, but a stubborn streak cut off the words. He didn't have to explain a damn thing to the likes of Fat Gervin. Gervin stared at the cast on Huey's left arm and at the bulge in his trouser leg caused by the heavy bandage on his knee.
Somebody told me you ain't the Bronx stomper you used to be. Looks like they was right.
It was that local black stud you palmed off on old man Jenkins.
Huey thought he could see gloating in Gervin's eyes, though perhaps it was imagination.
How'd the old man like them horses?
Huey decided there was no reason he should be the only one here with worries on his mind. Fat Gervin deserved a few.
He throwed a ring-tailed fit. Last time I saw him, his Fort Worth lawyers were getting ready to file a lawsuit against you.
Fort Worth lawyers had a reputation for being among the toughest in Texas, unless it might be the ones in Galveston. But those were too far away to carry much weight here. Gervin's smile died a sudden death.
Lawsuit?
There was no use in settling for a small lie when a big one would do so much more good.
Yeah. His lawyer said you pulled a fraud on him, and he ought to be able to collect at least $50,000. Maybe $100,000.
Gervin gripped the back of a chair, his heavy jaw sagging.
$100,000?
Plus lawyer's fees.
Doubt came into Gervin's eyes.
What? They can't do that.
Mr. Jenkins has got the same lawyers that almost throwed the TNP Railroad into bankruptcy.
We've got a nice table for you in the corner, Mr. Gervin.
Gervin turned and walked out, dragging his feet. The woman went to the window and stared after him, puzzled but not disappointed over his abrupt departure.
I never saw such a shameless flirt. It's a good thing that all the young ladies around here know him for what he is. And him a married man with two youngins.
To Huey, how Fat Gervin had wooed and won C.C. Tarpley's daughter was a mystery as profound as the afterlife. Hannigan held back a laugh until Gervin was well out of sight.
I swear, Huey, you are still the best straight-faced liar in West Texas. Fat won't get a bit of sleep tonight.
Huey should have felt a surge of triumph. But anger came instead, a sharp pain in the side.
I ain't had a good night's sleep since that black stud did this to me. That stud and Fat Gervin.
Huey didn't seem likely to sleep well tonight either. He lighted a lamp, then spread his blankets and sat on the steel cot in the back of Hannigan's office to roll a cigarette. He shifted his weight as the frame's sharp edge bit into his legs. He had found no way to be completely comfortable, whether sitting or lying down. He was tired from the trip, but the anger Gervin aroused swept away any sleeplessness he might have felt. He was wide awake and itching to move. The cigarette was bitter, its smoke burning his eyes. He took a couple of unsatisfactory drags on it, then tossed it into an ash-filled metal can, meant to catch cigarette butts and tobacco juice. Tobacco had not tasted right to him since the accident. He limped to the door and looked down the street. He saw a lamplight in Dutch Schneider's saloon. A drink couldn't hurt, and it might even help a little. The German was dismayed to see Huey's condition. He expressed his regrets. Huey saw a couple of cowboys at the bar, men he didn't know. At a table toward the rear, C.C. Tarpley sat hunched, alone, as he had been the last time Huey saw him. He spotted Huey and beckoned. Huey looked at Schneider.
Is C.C. doing any better?
Schneider shook his head.
Yeah, about the same. Always he was a fighter. Now the fight is gone and he only sits sipping a little whiskey.
I know how he feels. I'll go back and jaw with him a bit.
Tarpley gave Huey the same study the Dutchman had. Huey knew the sympathy in his voice was genuine.
I heard tell you got busted up. I'm sorry.
Well, it's what I always got paid such high wages for.
Sit down and have a drink. We can share miseries.
Huey pulled out a chair, sat, and stretched his good leg. The other would not bend.
You ever gone and seen a doctor, CC?
I don't need a doctor to tell me I ain't long for this world. He charged me for information I already know.
Huey pondered the logic in that. If CC died, the money he saved would do him no good, unless he figured on taking it with him. If anybody could do that, it would be old CC.
Well, maybe whatever's wrong with you can be fixed.
Can what's wrong with you be fixed?
I wish I knew.
Huey didn't like admitting to his doubts, but there were times when they bore down on him like the chill of a cold winter norther. They came now as he stared into the melancholy of the old man's eyes.
I was like you once, wilder than a March hare. Rode anything with hair on it and roped anything that had run. Came a time, though, when I had to start doing my riding in a buggy. Hated it at first, till I figured out I could hire men to do the things I couldn't do for myself, and I could concentrate on putting my ranch and my bank together.
I ain't a rancher or a banker.
I wasn't either then, but I learned there's bigger and better things to do than ride broncs and rope wild stock. Getting stove up was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Topley's eyes were bleak.
Now that I got all that stuff put together, what's fixing to happen to it?
You got a daughter, and she's got a couple of youngins. It'll go to them.
Time them kids get grown, there won't be nothing left of it. That son-in-law of mine is just waiting for me to cross over Jordan, and he'll run through it like a drunken mule skinner. Some gold-digging woman will flare a skirt, show him an ankle, and he'll be gone. Fat Gervin ain't got the judgment God gave a goose.
Huey doubted that Tarpley knew of the swindle Gervin had run on old man Jenkins. He saw no reason to burden his already troubled mind by telling him.
If I knew just when I was going to die, I might go shoot fat on my last day. We could make it a trip to hell together.
With a little luck, Huey thought, some affronted father or husband might beat Tarpley to that pleasure. Most women shied away from fat like quail from a bird hound and giggled behind his back, but a few would probably be impressed by the wealth he was in line to inherit.
You could put it in your will that fat ain't to have anything to do with anything.
I've already made the mistake of letting him pretty well take over the bank and the everyday running of the ranch. And whether I like it or not, he's my daughter's husband and daddy my grandkids.
Looks to me like the only choice you've got is to be stubborn and outlive him. You used to be a fighter, CC. I can't see you just giving up.
Are you any better? You used to be full of piss and vinegar. Now you gotta look about you like a whipped dog with your tail between your legs.
They sat in silence, together, but each alone, agonizing over his individual troubles. Schneider came over to see if their glasses needed refilling, but they didn't, so he retreated quietly, careful not to disturb their solitary deliberations. The whiskey made Huey's stomach uneasy. He decided he'd had enough, and it was time to go. Staring into the old rancher's sallow face only depressed him.
I do wish you'd see a doctor, CC.
The old man didn't answer, and Huey didn't push him.
Good night.
Huey slept fitfully and was up before good daylight, boiling coffee in a can on top of a wood heater in Hannigan's office. Hannigan came along about sunup and invited Huey down to his house for breakfast, but Huey begged off. His stomach was none too stable. He'd not drunk much last night at Schneider's, so he blamed his problem on his brief encounter with Fat Gervin, author of his difficulties. Hannigan was gone a while, then came back. He cranked the truck motor, but it wouldn't start.
Consarn it, Heap. I'd have junked you where you sit. You're more dag-nab trouble than you're worth, you one-ton paperweight.
Huey took his crutch and walked to the open door.
Told you oughtn't to have sold the mules.
That probably needs a rest after going to Alpine and back. My other truck's out on a trip. Looks like I won't be getting you to Walters and Eve's today.
No hurry. I'd be nothing but a burden to them anyway.
Perhaps someone would come to town from over in the direction of Walters, and Huey could get a ride home in a wagon or buggy. If not today, maybe tomorrow. Time didn't mean much when a man couldn't do anything useful with it.
I still have a couple of wagons and a load of freight to haul in them. But they're in the wrong direction, so make yourself at home. You're welcome to stay here as long as you want to.
Huey had no wish to impose upon hospitality. As soon as Hannigan and a driver left with the wagons, he began looking around for something practical to do. The office had not been cleaned in a while. Hannigan's wife probably figured she had chores enough in keeping their house clean. Huey found an old rag and wiped dust from shelves and cabinets. Then he took a broom from the corner and began sweeping the floor. His impairments made him awkward, and he knew the effects of his labor would be short-lived. As soon as the wind arose, dust from the street and corrals would blow in through the open windows and door. At least when Hannigan came back, he'd find new dust instead of old.
Ah, Huey.
Turning, Huey saw Schneider, the saloon keeper, in the doorway.
It is a good thing you are doing. If a job you are looking for, there is more of the same at my place of business.
Huey felt a little embarrassed being caught with a broom in his hand.
Well, I've drunk a saloon dry a time or two, but I've never swamped one out, and I've never heard it cheap.
He didn't know which job would be more humiliating.
One of the trucks of blue was supposed to have brought me a supply of whiskey from the railroad at Midland.
They looked around, but didn't find the shipment.
Yeah, Blue said he had a truck out. It must be bringing your whiskey. By the way, Dutch, if anybody comes in from the direction of Walter and Eve's place, I wish you'd tell him. I don't want to impose on Blue any longer than I have to.
He does not mind. He is your friend, and I am your friend too. Come visit my place as long as you wish.
Huey warmed with gratitude. He'd never had much money in his pockets, but he'd never lacked for friends. Fat Gervin had access to C.C. Tarpley's bottomless bank account, but he had no real friends. Huey wouldn't trade places with him for all the money he could load upon both of Blue Hannigan's trucks.
I'm obliged to you, Dutch. You know, maybe it's time I learned how to swamp out a saloon. And then about the only thing I can say I've never done is to herd sheep.